The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Nau mai, hoki mai ki a The Fold. E mihi nei ko Duncan Greve, tōku ingoa. My guest today, the general manager and the founder of Big Fan. That's Savina Fountain and Joel Little, who have created this new. It's sort of hard to you know succinctly describe. It's both a venue and a set of studios and a writing room, and the word that Savina used frequently while talking about it is a community, and It's the sort of physical place of it is just around the corner from us in Morningside, you know, even closer to our former office at the Spinoff. So we watched this thing go from a construction site to the finished product. It's now been open 6 months, and it's really, I don't know, when I think about it, I get almost like misty-eyed. Like, it's just such a beautiful thing to exist in the world, and such a beautiful example of someone giving back. I mean, so the whole thing happened because Joel Little, one-time singer of Goodnight Nurse and writer for Kids of 88 and then some commercial music, set up a studio called Golden Age. And in that studio, one of the first non-commercial projects they recorded was Pure Heroin. And, you know, so... Yeah, between he and Ella, they made the first Lord record. It became a global hit and changed Joel's life. And while, you know, the success of Lord is kind of pretty well understood here, I feel like some people aren't aware of just how extraordinary Joel Little's parallel career has been. You know, in terms of, you know, he's written with Taylor Swift, with Imagine Dragons, with just some of the biggest artists in the world. And if you just check his discography, and there are just so many smash singles which he's worked on. And you know, as a result, he's done quite well for himself. And for most people, that would be enough. And you know, just the act of continuing to create music is a beautiful thing. But what he and his wife Gemma did was, when they returned to New Zealand, they found this venue that, it was a couple of apartments and almost like a loading dock, and have spent, I would honestly be scared to know how much, to turn it into Big Fan. And they've hired Savina Fountain, who is as we discussed on the podcast, someone who's worked in live music and in really all aspects of the industry since her teenage years. And so I wanted to get the pair of them together because they're both very smart, very driven, very generous people to talk about their careers in music, to talk about the sort of 2000s, which is when they both came up, and also to talk about the kind of changes that have happened to the music industry over the last 10 years, and how both their backgrounds and the kind of evolution of the industry helped birth and kind of underpin the philosophy that drives Big Fan. So yeah, it's about music, but it's also about kind of culture and technology and the sort of the live experience, both in terms of performance and of writing and recording. I'm really stoked. I've been wanting to do this for some time. Really admire the heck out of the pair of them, and think Big Fan is one of the most exciting and impressively conceived institutions to arrive in our culture in some time. So this is Savina Fountain and Joel Little on The Fold. Tēnā kōrua, and welcome to The Fold, Savina and Joel.
Kia ora, thank you for having us.
Kia ora.
Thank you so much for you. You know, you've journeyed all the way up the hill from Big Fan, all of 200 metres from our doors, but I do appreciate it, and I've been looking forward to this for some time. I just want to dive into it, and one of the things that sort of struck me when I was kind of researching ahead of time was that, you know, one of the things that we'll explore in this podcast is the sort of rate and pace of change that's occurred in the music industry throughout the course of your careers, and to the extent to which that's fed into the thinking behind Big Fan. And one institution which just announced its closure recently that you're both graduates of is Mains. I wonder if we could start by you just talking a bit, each of you, about your time there and what that provided you.
Sure. Do you want to go first, Savina?
Oh, right. Okay. I'll go first. So I went to Mains. I just realised it's been 20 years since I first attended. So if I can do my maths, 2003, I did it was the live sound and event production. I think it would change the course name over time. But so I studied there, and it was like a real freaky year. For some reason, that year we had like 8 non-male people in the course, which apparently they've, you know, never had that many. And then I've just made literally like lifelong friends from that year. And I just really wanted to get into the music industry, and I found this course and I thought, that sounds great. I don't know if I wanted to be a live sound engineer, but I thought it was interesting enough, and yeah, learned a lot. Met this guy because he was studying across the hallway, doing a different course, and yeah, and then I actually worked as a live sound engineer and then AV tech, and then I returned back to Mains to study a diploma in music event management, which also finished like a few years later, and then no, obviously doesn't exist anymore, but yeah, and then just been involved with Mains as the program advisory chair for a number of years. I've done guest lecturing there, so had a lot of time and love for Mains. You know, it's really upsetting that it's closed, because it's had a huge impact on my life.
Yeah, it seems one of those rare sort of kind of creative vocational schools that really does, if you just look at the list of its graduates, it's, yeah, there's a lot of people who roll back to there. What do you think we lose with its closing, Joel?
Oh man, I don't know. I just feel like New Zealand needs more of that and not less of that. So just in like as simple as that is, that's the saddest part about it. I had a great time there. I studied the contemporary music performance course, and at the time I just thought it was just an excuse for me to kind of be like, hey, mum and dad, I'm like going to do something, you know, educational. But for me, I was it was an excuse to do music every day, learn about music. The course had like a full scope of industry studies and theory studies, and then the whole performance side of it and songwriting and that kind of thing. So it gave me a great kind of scope of all different aspects of the industry. I was managing my band, Goodnight Nurse, myself. So I was, you know, wanting to learn more about how to do all of that side of things properly. It just it provided a lot of opportunity for me to grow as a musician and as someone who wanted to be in the music industry. So yeah, it's sad, man. It's really sad.
We recently published an oral history of Te Hamo's We Gone Ride on Friday, which became, I think Alex, when she started researching it, thought it'd be this cute little piece, and it became this enormous kind of sprawling thing. I think it topped out at 23,000 words before she started whittling it down.
Well,
and it's because, you know, a particular song can actually contain so much more than that in terms of the participants involved and what it meant to them. It also was just a sort of a moment in kind of New Zealand music history, where you had New Zealand hip hop on this crazy high, but there was also like, it was integrated into this New Zealand pop scene, of which Goodnight Nurse was very much a part. You know, and there was something about that, the sort of specter of that in the national consciousness that felt pretty enormous at the time, and I don't know if we've necessarily recaptured since. Joel, do you want to just talk about, you know, it both being a sort of a witness to that moment and how it and, you know, institutions like Edgefest and so on, which you played multiple times, I think, sort of contributed to your career and the sort of growth of Goodnight Nurse?
Yeah. I mean, man, I remember that video coming out and just being absolutely blown away. Like, there was a long period where I just always thought that every New Zealand music video was shit. And, like, was as soon as – it was almost like, oh, no, this is terrible, but – I feel like when I saw that logo come up in the corner, I was always like, "Oh no, what are we gonna witness here?" That's like around that time was when I feel like the production values and all of that just really kind of kicked it up a notch. That video just to me seemed like an international artist had come out. It kind of came out of nowhere in my eyes, anyway. That song. So I was just blown away by that. I feel like that it was. I mean, that was encouraging and motivating in terms of wanting to push yourself to be better and to do things at a more international standard. I feel like Edgefest and stuff was just fun. It was just like an opportunity to play in front of a massive crowd of super hyped people. We were always like the opening. Oh, no, there was usually a competition winner and then it would be Goodnight Nurse. we'll play after them. So we were like way down the ladder, but super fun. I remember, like, and we get, you know, there was like one. I don't know if it was the same one, and maybe it was Chingy and Presidents of the USA, like the weirdest kind of like weirdest lineups, but like kind of super awesome at the same time. And I remember Jaden, our drummer, going back after Presidents of the USA had played to try and get an autograph, and they were like, "Can you just give us a minute, man?" He was like, "Ugh." This was like definitely when they were not in their prime either. It was like it was pretty funny. We had some great adventures on those tours for sure.
Because it did feel like that, you know, it's interesting what you say about it feeling like an international quality song. Because I think while New Zealand had artists travel before then multiple times, there was something about that moment which sort of felt like it gave, breathed life into a broader group of people, gave them permission to start thinking about, you know, New Zealand music isn't just a genre that could plausibly only be of interest to New Zealanders within New Zealand, but it could travel somehow.
Yeah. And as far as I know, that music video was made in New Zealand, right?
They didn't go. It was made in Britomart just when Britomart had been born.
And I was like, look, that's New Zealand. And it looks like, I feel like the quality of this stands up with everything else that I'm seeing. And I think, that was a huge achievement for the time.
Sabina, you were working in a sort of another end of the industry in that kind of all ages space at the time, I think. I mean, what sort of drew you into that space, and what was it that made you sort of feel like this was a place that it was important to put energy into?
Oh, to be honest, I think it actually came from a really like selfish thing, as you probably maybe like all teenagers are. It was just my band. We were in the Rock Quest and we thought after the Rock Quest, oh, what do we do now? Got nowhere to play. Oh, I'll organise a show. I met some other bands at neighbouring schools. So hired out the community hall and started organising shows. And then as we started doing them, I'd get approached by other like touring New Zealand bands saying, oh, we want to come and play an all-ages show, could you organize it for us? And I like kind of pretended that I wasn't like some school kid, you know, trying to organize these shows. And that's kind of how it grew. And then kind of met a group of people that were doing similar things over on the North Shore. And then we sort of formed this collective called Local Output. And then we just started organizing different shows around North Shore. We did some band competitions and things like that. And then we caught the eyes of the North Shore, I think it was like called the Youth Council or something like that. And then they started giving us some funding and then just sort of grew quite organically from there. And I just really like realized that sort of like gave me this sense of belonging, like part of being in a community. And you just literally just made friends because, you know, like growing up in high school, not everyone that you grow up with, like you've got the same taste in music or anything like that, same interests. And then something through music, I think you can kind of connect with people and then you sort of feel like these are my people. And some of those people I obviously still hang out with today. Some of them are actually still running venues and putting on events and things like that. So it's made a really lasting impact. And I think it's really important to have that place where teenagers could go and form their community.
Do you feel like it's because that's such a crucial part, right, of the sort of pipe into the industry is having a sort of a place where that, that kind of experimentation and those early experiences can happen. That's and there's always been that kind of perennial, like the sort of once you graduate into 18, those venues are quite a different and kind of potentially quite a scary place for a teenager. What is your sense of what the environment is like for that group, for the all ages scene at the moment?
Well, I guess the feedback that we're getting is that there's definitely less and less all ages, you know, shows and venues these days. I think it feel like that scene, you know, we used to call it the all ages music scene. I don't know if there is one. Like, I feel like when I was growing up and even when I was past 18, I was still going to all ages shows where there was no bar or alcohol. But we just like going to shows and then the same people turn up and it was just like where everyone just went all the time. I don't know if that much of that sort of exists much these days. And hopefully we're changing things with what we're doing here at Big Fan.
Yeah, it's I feel like COVID had a huge part to play in that as well, because I mean, even me with my work as a music producer, I'm meeting young artists who have started writing songs, got popular online and been signed all within COVID times and and have never played a show. And so they'll get to a point where they could fill an arena and they've never played a show in their life and they don't really care about it. They don't really know about that side of it and that the experience of playing live and how important it is. And yeah, it's super interesting. And I think that life is so online now for everyone, especially teenagers. And so the fact that they haven't had the opportunity to get out there and experience a live show until COVID's kind of, what's the word? I guess now that they can get out a bit more, there's the opportunity for them to discover that, but it's not something that's even occurring to them because it wasn't a thing at the age that you would normally get interested in something like that. So yeah, hopefully we can kind of instill a bit more of that excitement in people to get out and experience a show, because there's nothing like a live gig and being a part of a scene and seeing the same bands and seeing them grow and being a part of that is such an important thing.
I want to sort of tease out some of that, because I'm also thinking about the sort of feedback mechanism that a live show represents and how different that is to, you know, like I heard and read artists kind of being quite angst-ridden, quite understandably, about the impact that TikTok has had in terms of the feedback loop that comes out of that for songwriting and the incentives around, you know, how you even structure music. Maybe it's kind of a good time to kind of dive into that. As a producer and a songwriter, over these past few years and, you know, in lockdown where you were, you know, live was gone, but streaming was very much still there, social was still very much there, and TikTok rose during that time pretty extraordinarily. How are you are you feeling that in terms of the sessions you're writing, or is there still a bit of a firewall around the creation of the song?
Feeling what part of it? Sorry, the impact of TikTok and people trying to write for TikTok purposes.
Precisely.
There's definitely a world of artists that are doing that, and a huge number of artists are getting signed because they have a song that goes viral on TikTok. It's a really interesting new world, that one. I mean, there are a lot of artists who have a big song that goes viral on TikTok. They don't really have anything to follow it up with, and it's not really building, well, for a lot of them, it's not really building a loyal fan base, because people are just into not just the song, but like that specific section of the song. And so they're coming to shows just to hear that little 15-second snippet of a song. They're not really worried about the rest of it. And so I don't know. It's a weird world, and there are artists who are having great careers based off of TikTok, but they'll only write a 15-second snippet, and then if that starts to get a bit of traction, it's like, okay, maybe we'll finish this one up. So it's not, you know, maybe we'll finish writing the rest of the song. So it's not something that I particularly enjoy or have been involved in or really like want to be involved in, that side of things. Like, I still just like trying to write a full song or a full album even. But it's definitely a new world, especially for younger artists, because they just like, why would I do that when everyone's attention spans are so short and I can just do it this other way?
Yeah, I wanted to go into that a bit more later on, but for now, just again thinking about this kind of the prehistory of Big Fan and also institutions that came up before the sort of impact of streaming and social. One that sticks out is Golden Age, the studio that's, you know, also a few hundred meters from here. Do you know? I just wondered if you could talk about what motivated you to start that, because it does feel of a piece with the, if the thing that you need doesn't exist, you have to build it.
Yeah. I mean, Golden Age for me was like, at the time was, I had like the Goodnight Nurse thing was kind of running its course. I'd had a kid and was trying to figure out how to actually still make money off of being in the music industry. And I'd started doing some music for TV commercials. And so Golden Age, the opportunity to start Golden Age was kind of came from that. So I had kind of had quick success with writing music for TV commercials for whatever reason, had a bit of a knack for it. And so when the opportunity came up to set up a space, I was like, well cool, I want to do that to pay the rent. But obviously my main love is trying to work with artists and write original songs. And so the deal was that we'd try and do like an ad or two a month, and then we'd get new artists in to work with. And then it just happened that Ella was one of the first people that I actually worked with in there. And then that kind of changed everything. So, and then Josh, Savina's husband, actually, he was the one that when all of the Lord stuff happened and I was like, man, I think I'm going to have to move to LA and give it a crack over there. He was kind of my first and only choice for someone to take over, because he'd been doing a similar thing elsewhere. Super talented guy, kind of fit the vibe of what we're trying to do at Golden Age. And yeah, I mean, he's been there way, way longer than I have, and he's had huge success there as well. So
it's interesting, right? This idea, and again, kind of heading towards Big Fan, of, you know, New Zealand has, it's not vast sums of money, but there are these kind of ongoing institutional supports for music and other cultural forms through things like Creative New Zealand or New Zealand On Air. Yet the studio piece, which often, you know, at least to me, as you know, in a past life I was a music journalist, know some musicians, always felt like a place where you could really, you know, if you were to have that infrastructure, you created space for projects like, you know, I mean, they're not all going to be the Love Club, but to allow them to form in a kind of a less pressured environment. You know, I noticed that with Big Fan, you've had some work with the Ministry of Culture and Heritage. You know, so Savina, thinking about, you know, you talked about the North Shore Council, I think it was, so it must be even pre-Super City.
Yeah, definitely was, showing my age.
So, you know, how do you sort of rate that sort of cultural infrastructure in New Zealand, where it's directed? You know, the music video thing is kind of notorious as a thing that you get to do, whether you like it or not, in a way. What's your sort of general sense of how we do that in this country?
Oh, I feel like, I think I was just speaking to someone about this on the weekend, is people really surprised from overseas at how much support and funding there is in New Zealand. And I think that we sort of take it for granted because we've had it for a while and funding has been increased in the last, you know, sort of four years. So I feel like there's a lot of opportunity. But I guess maybe, I think that's sort of like, maybe if I'm sort of looking at it, I feel like there's a lot of support out there, but I think maybe for a lot of younger emerging people coming up, they probably will say the opposite, and they'll say that there's like this gatekeeping community, that the funding's only available to a selected number of people, and they reckon there isn't enough, or there isn't enough for this type of thing, that there's nowhere for them to go. So I think there's definitely still gaps out there, but I think that we're really fortunate here in Aotearoa.
The Fold is brought to you by O-Media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to O-Media for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
So let's talk about Big Fan now. Maybe Savinika, you could explain what it is, and then Joel, you could talk about your motives for willing it into being, I guess.
So Big Fan is where it runs as a charitable trust, and we have a live music, all ages and licensed music venue downstairs, and we have three recording studios upstairs, so all under one roof in Morningside. And we've been in operation for, I think we just opened our doors, so about 6 months ago, probably around this week, I think, so still pretty baby new space. We want to create this community where people can come together, enjoy music, create music, write music, and for a space to be enjoyed by as many people as possible.
And I mean, it's a beautiful idea, and I've been through it. It's quite an extraordinary space. It kind of feels like something you'd imagine in a dream, but never could conceive of actually being around, especially for musicians. What was it that pushed you to kind of breathe it into life?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's a nice thing to say. I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Golden Age before, and I feel like when I set up Golden Age, that was for my own survival. You know, like that was at the time I was trying to figure out how to make a living off of music and kind of fall into the music production thing in a way. I never set out to be a producer or even thought of it as a viable career at the time necessarily. And then obviously I was, through my career, I've always just kind of, you know, followed my nose and done what I was excited to do at the time and what I thought was the smart thing to do at the time. And one thing led to another, and it's ended up going really well for me. And then after a while, the thought starts to creep into your head, well, what could I do to give back to people who don't have what I have? It was always just a logical choice to do something within music. And so my wife and I were just chatting with people and talking about what was needed in New Zealand. We'd moved back from LA after 4 years, and I was trying to find something that would kind of connect me a little bit more with the New Zealand music industry, because I definitely feel like I was just kind of doing my own thing with artists from the States pretty much exclusively, or from, you know, international artists, and had kind of lost touch a little bit with what was going on here. And just one of the main things that kept coming up was the lack of space, accessible space for people to be able to go and explore the idea of having a career in music in whatever way that might be. So initially Big Fan, we found the building in Morningside, and it was two apartments upstairs and the old Crave Cafe downstairs. And so our initial idea was just to do the studios upstairs and just leave downstairs and maybe make that a community space for, I don't know, for whatever people wanted to do in there, market days or whatever. But then I feel like it was kind of like maybe like 6 months in where I was like, I think it should just, like, it seems like it would be a shame if we didn't turn this, like, soundproof this space and, like, actually make it a venue. Like, it's kind of the perfect size for newer artists to put on a show and not feel, like, if, say, 30, 40 people show up, it's still going to feel like a welcoming space. They're not going to feel like, feel silly for putting on a show. But you can also fit kind of up to 200 people in there, which turns it into like a massive heaving freaking sweatbox, which is also awesome. So that was just something that kind of, the whole thing with Big Fan is the idea got bigger as we kind of went on. Jim and my wife and I would get more and more excited about doing certain things, and then wanting the place to just be as multifunctional as possible. So we ended up, yeah, just, I don't know, just installing all these different cables for different things and trying to future-proof and be like, oh, what if somebody wanted to record from the venue up to like one of the studios? And then I was like, oh, that'd be cool. And then it's like, what if we wanted to record all the rooms at the same time? Like, how can we do that? And so it just kind of snowballed and turned into this much bigger thing than we had initially kind of thought. But I'm glad it did, and I'm glad that we've gone down this road. It's a, yeah, it's a special place, and we're super excited to be up and running. Yeah, 6 months has gone really fast.
How have people responded to it, Sabina? Like, now that it's, because there's always a gap between when you make something and how you sort of imagine it being used versus what actually happens. Has it been full from the jump? What's the community's response to its arrival been?
It's kind of crazy, really, but I think that really speaks to Joel and Gemma's, like, they're really visionaries, because anyone can have an idea and you think this is what people want, this is what people need, this is sort of the feedback, but literally every single thing that they envisioned this place to be has all come to fruition. It's, like, insane. Like, even when I started working on the project, it was, you know, we'd had all these, like, crazy ideas, like, oh, it'd be cool, you know, like, one day it'll be used for, like, a big, like, part of a big, like, festival, like, there'll be, like, writing camps all week, all the studios will be in use, there'll be, like, people doing this, you know, like, filming in there, people be doing, like, music video release parties, and there'll be, like, all sorts of different things. And I think all of those things happened in, like, 3 months, and it was just like, what? But I think to probably anyone else would be like, oh, what? But I think that's really what Joel and Gemma set out to create, and there is definitely a demand for it. So it's been sort of like, it's been crazy, because I think also we were quite delayed in our opening, so there was always like this anticipation or people wanting to get into the space, but we just had no timeline that was sort of given to us about when we were actually going to be open. So we sort of weren't able to take any solid booking. So we sort of felt like we were sort of always pencil booking people and removing. And we eventually gave up in the end. And then suddenly we got a council inspection and then all passed. And then it was like, right, we go, like booking all these things. And it just all happened. And it just, even now, like the demand for a space like this has just been, yeah, it's crazy. And most, you know, Friday, Saturday nights are sort of gone for the next couple of months. So it's really good to see that. And like artists from sort of all levels, which is the whole vision behind Big Fan. It's not just for established artists or international artists. It's for literally every single level, whatever stage you're at. So we've had people play their first shows and there's a first-time artist. And we've had international bands playing there and established bands. So it's really cool.
It's interesting, right, because you were building it through the sort of COVID lockdowns with, you know, closed borders, live venues really, really struggling, the whole industry kind of trying to figure out how to respond to that. And yet what it was very much built to kind of based on what had gone before. And even if you think about the, you know, the kinds of artists you were describing earlier, the, you know, who might have recorded in their bedrooms hits that had been heard by millions of people without ever playing a show, in some ways it's a bit of a throwback to an imagined more kind of community focused or more in person, more live type music industry. You know, do you feel like it's, you know, is it sort of satisfying for, given that that's very much what birthed both of you, really, that it is still fulfilling that role and feels like it can act as a bit of a resistance to that sort of push towards the more kind of individualized, digitized industry that is very much right. And not that that's invalid, but no. But there's a different road still.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing with the music industry is it's constantly evolving and changing, and things that weren't popular come back into popularity. Like there's always swings and roundabouts. And so I feel like the live thing, there's probably going to be a group of people who are just super hungry for that because they never got to experience that. And so being able to provide that, I mean, we wanted it to be, like I said before, kind of like multifunctional and also like not not redundant. And so our whole thing with Big Fan has also been, we want to try out all these things, do all these different, you know, do the camps and the shows and all the stuff. But if we're doing things that people aren't interested in and that aren't helpful to people, then we just, you know, we're not going to force people to do things that aren't useful for them. And so our whole thing is, and we're lucky as well because it's not for profit, and because for us, like even through COVID, because our whole intention has been, you know, we're not looking to make money off of it. We're never taking a cent from it. So we weren't stressed about that. We weren't like, oh, what's this? What's the bottom line here? Like, how are we going to get back in the black? You know, but it's never been about that. We always knew we were going to lose a bunch of money on it.
Well done.
Yeah. Thank you. Good at that.
It's a pretty fun way to lose money.
Yeah, but that's fine because it means we can just try things. And if they don't work, then we'll be like, it's not like this is our business model and we have to stick to this thing. It's like, we'll try that. And if it doesn't work, then we'll see what it becomes over the next couple of years and see what people want to use it for. And if that's to create for a live scene to come up out of it, then that's amazing. But then also we have the studios upstairs. So even for those bedroom producers who might have only made music at home, being able to come in and realize that there are other people that think the same way that they do is really cool. Like you see some of the, we've done a couple of, we have these residencies. So we give people send in their demo and they can all come in. We give three of our studios away for free for the week. And so people that are making different types of music or just come in, they get a free week in the studio. And just seeing their faces and them being able to chat to me and whoever else and ask for advice and them to be able to chat to each other and talk about the way that they're approaching things in their bedroom studio. It just, it's just healthy. It's just a healthy thing for people to do, to be able to talk and kind of see that they're not the only ones that are thinking the way that they think. Because otherwise it can get a little bit lonely if you're just, you know, locked away in your own little studio and never really kind of having that sense of community and sense of the bigger picture.
So, you know, in terms of that old becoming new again thing, we were just talking before we started, hit record, about your show, The Reunited Goodnight Nurse, supporting My Chemical Romance at Western Springs recently, which wasn't just a reunion. There were new songs released, and the whole thing felt quite like, I mean, watching it, it felt like kind of cathartic and transportative. It was a pretty amazing situation. You know, what motivated that, and you know, did you sort of learn kind of new things about yourself, about your relationship with those songs in the process of rediscovering them?
Yeah, I definitely did. I mean, it honestly all just started as a bit of a joke, because I recently turned 40, and so I was wanting to like get the band back together for the 40th kind of thing, just to play some shows literally at the 40th for a laugh. And then, I know, it always seems to be the way, like things just end up getting bigger than they're initially intended to get. But I guess someone must have mentioned it to somebody, and then, you know, we had a text saying, if we put an offer in for the My Chemical Romance show, would you guys consider it? And then we're like, oh, I guess. Yeah, it was just, I mean, I love a challenge. It was like, I literally hadn't played live in 13 years. And it just seemed like the most ridiculous way of like getting back on the horse was to just put myself in front of 17,000 people. I don't know. I feel like all these things, like there's never like anything super deep or complicated about it. It's just like a gut feeling at the time. And I think it was great way to reconnect with the other guys in the band who were all still friends but had never really we just hadn't been in a room playing instruments together. And so when we first had a bit of a jam to see if we still were still physically capable of doing it, it kind of just came back. It was like you know, like riding a bike almost. It was weird. I felt like music's so weird, like the muscle memory. Yeah, and then we would just say, well, if we're going to do it, we've got to do it right. And, you know, especially me, who now has a bit of a reputation as being good at music, I have to, I can't look like an idiot. So we just embraced it. And yeah, it was fun, man. It was so much fun. And then the people that started coming out of the woodwork when we announced it, and just the stories that they were telling about, how when they were 15 or 14 and first coming to our shows, and the friends that they made at the shows, and what the songs meant to them at the time, all of that stuff that you just kind of, when you're not in it, you're just, getting on with your life. You know, it's not things that you really think about. And so those reminders were super special. And I feel like it was cathartic in that way, because I definitely felt when we were in Goodnight Nurse at the time and taking it really seriously, we weren't necessarily like the industry darlings. Nobody really cared about us or thought that our music was good or anything. Well, then the music industry and the hierarchy of the New Zealand music industry. But the reminder that the fans were like, they actually cared about it all. So yeah, it was really cool.
So lastly, I mean, again, because it kind of speaks to, we're all sort of, I'm definitely the eldest, but we're sort of vaguely similar ages, certainly came up in that 2000s era music industry. And it's always hard to disentangle your own fondness for your times which were particularly kind of electric in your kind of upbringing versus the, what is a true and profound change. But there, thinking about that sort of 2000s era and the sort of institutions that made it happen, and how those have been kind of frayed and dissolved by the rise of sort of social for discovery and streaming for consumption. I don't really know what where I'm going with this, but do you sort of, as participants in the industry today, do you feel like the sort of that change from a kind of retail and live as the center of the industry to this kind of more digitized, technology driven or dictated version has impacted music in terms of how it's made in a positive or negative way? Or are you kind of just generally at peace with that's just the motion and you have to evolve with it?
Well, I can't speak to the music creation part of that because I was not very good at that at all. But as a participant of it, I just feel like it's really interesting because you even look at some artists now, domestically or internationally, that they can have a lot of followers, they can have this big presence, have the numbers, but they can't get people to buy tickets. And you see that here as well. And I just think that's really interesting because I grew up in the era where you went to shows and you built up a good live following, and then the stuff happened, all the industry stuff happened because there was like a thing going. And it's interesting now that artists, they basically playing their first shows after they've already had all of that. So there's all of this expectation for them to be this really great live performer, but they've never even played live before. They don't know how to. And it's like a real, I'm guessing it's a real, I'm really done it too much, but it's a real art to it. Not everyone can, do it. So I feel like it's just a really interesting thing. And I guess for me, I've had such a great time going to shows and building that community, making friends, that I think it's really important to provide those in-person, opportunities. And I think people really crave that, after especially COVID, is to actually come together and connect with other people. And I think, I really hope that live music is, going to be around and forever,
It will be. I mean, it's been around since people could, bang a couple of rocks together. I feel kind of neutral about the whole technology thing. I haven't been in the industry for, if you include my days at Mains, 20 years now, and seen, I mean, it's changing all the time, and people are always freaked out about the new change, and then they figure out a way to kind of work within the new, the walls of whatever it is that the change happens to be. So creatively, I think it's fine. I've always just, there was a time when Spotify was huge and every record label was saying the song needs to start with the chorus, or the chorus needs to happen within like a certain amount of time because that's the algorithm and it needs to hit the song, and people, and lots of people were coming into writing sessions and being like, oh crap, we've got to do it like this. And I was just like, look, let's just try and write a good song. Like if we're trying to have all of these kind of restrictions on it and rules, then it's just not going to be interesting. We're just going to sound like every other song. And like, I feel like if we just approach it like trying to write a good song, then that solves a lot of the problems. And if you try and follow all these, all the so-called rules, then there's still like a one in a million chance that your song's going to do well anyway, because there's so many songs out there and there's so many other things that come into play. So in that regard, you know, I think just trying to write the best thing you can write is the most important thing. And then in regards to live, I mean, I just, when you guys are talking about it now, it just reminded me of when I took my daughter Emmy to one of our first opening shows. She's 12. At Big Fan, and just like seeing her face light up, just seeing live music that close, because it's a small venue as well, like the band's right there. She was just so excited, and she'd never really, I mean, she's been to bigger shows and things, but she'd never really experienced it like that close up. And just seeing her face just made me go, man, this is like, kids are going to be, this is going to start the ball rolling for some people. Some people are going to want to chase some dreams after having that experience and feeling that excitement. So I feel fine about it.
It's a pretty great place to end it. Thank you both so much for coming up here. And if you're listening and curious at all, I strongly recommend checking out Big Fan in any capacity you can. It's a pretty extraordinary place. Congratulations to the pair of you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.